Welcome everybody, this is How To English, Teach and Learn with Gav and Im.
It's a podcast about teaching and learning English as a foreign language.
All opinions stated are personal and references will be given when necessary. Hello Gav.
Hi Em, welcome to the show and welcome to the followers too.
Welcome everybody. And today's topic is all about anxiety. Gav, what is anxiety?
Well, in that case, Em, it's time for
Learn a Word.
And this week's word is anxiety.
Okay, fun word. Oh. What is anxiety, Gav?
Anxiety, M, according to Concise Oxford English Dictionary, 11th edition, anxiety is a noun, a feeling of being anxious.
Right. Gav, what is anxious?
I think of it as a kind of nervousness.
Yeah, that feeling you get in your stomach when you're not happy about doing something and you feel really edgy, nervous. Doesn't really go away sometimes. I think anxious can be with you a long time.
According to psychiatry, anxiousness is a nervous disorder marked by excessive unease.
So Gav, what's the difference between anxious and nervous? If I say I feel anxious, is it different? I feel nervous before an exam.
At a glance, Em, there are a couple of differences between anxiety and nervousness, and this comes from psychcentral.com. Anxiety has a clinical definition, while nervousness does not.
That makes sense.
Anxiety symptoms can be mild or severe, but nervousness is usually considered mild.
I see. So maybe if you're having something on a regular basis for the same reason, the same situation, you would consider that to be anxiety. If it's a long-standing, more serious feeling.
So you might feel nervous before a big event, but anxiety could be long-term and come up at any time.
Mm-hmm. Which definitely ties into our teaching and learning feelings.
Nervousness may go away after the event, whereas anxiety could persist.
Right. It stays around.
Em, can you identify with this personally?
I can, absolutely.
Have you experienced any of these anxious or nervous feelings?
Before I give my answer, Gav, can I just point out how good your pronunciation is?
You can.
That was effortless, wasn't it? The way you switched between the noun and the adjective.
Remind me.
You feeling
anxious.
And you experience
anxiety. And do we need to check the spelling too? As this is Learn a Word, Em, we need to get really deep into these words.
Go ahead.
Anxious. A-N-X-I-O-U-S. Anxious.
Anxiety. A-N-X-I-E-T-Y. Anxiety.
Nice.
Just have no idea how the X changes from a anxiety to a shush of anxious. I can't tell you why, followers, but it just is. Don't forget, anxious and anxiety. And Gav, coming back to your question, yeah, I know all about anxiety. I've experienced it on many different levels, on many different occasions. And what about yourself?
I have experienced these too. But before I answer the question, should we break the show down into student anxiety and teacher anxiety?
We can if you want, Gav.
I think I can talk about both of them. And why not invite somebody to talk to us on this topic too. So let's begin by talking about our own anxieties, Em. And yes, I do suffer from time to time from anxiety.
What makes you anxious?
Students.
What about them?
And classes and timetables and fatigue and all of these things.
Oh, so you think it's worse when you're tired?
Maybe. It can be a cause of tiredness, being stressed too.
That's also a good point. Anxiety does make you feel tired. Everything's a bit harder when you're anxious. But what is it about classes or people or students that makes you anxious?
It could be a struggle with a difficult class or a difficult student where maybe they're not responding well to my teaching materials or teaching style.
Mm-hmm. So you start feeling like the magic's disappearing in the lesson, that it's just not working, and then that feeling of anxiety starts to creep up on you.
My confidence starts to dissolve, and I'm wondering, how do I make this student learn and enjoy the lessons?
So how do you deal with it when you feel like that?
Well, fortunately, it doesn't happen very often, but I might ask the students how I could improve the lessons, what's working, what's not working. I could...
Sorry, just to go into that, you face it head on. You just say, right, everyone, this isn't really working. Let's see why it's not working.
I don't have to say that. I can say, we've had a couple of lessons. How do you think it's going? I also have a technique where I might say, tell me about your previous teacher. What did you enjoy about their lessons? And then get an idea of what works with that group. And then that will help me prepare my own lessons.
Very good. That's a good tip. Make it not about you, about other people. That's a good strategy.
I've even tried the technique of saying to a difficult class, I have another class who I'm really struggling with.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah, exactly. And I explained that there's another class with some students who are maybe not enjoying the class very much. I don't really know what they want to learn, how they want to learn it, what materials are really working. So I say to this class, do you have any advice?
Nice. That is clever.
And they often do have lots of advice, which is really useful. And then I apply that advice to this class.
So it's a bit like a feedback critique, but about a hypothetical class, not them.
It's indirect, but I don't think they notice or realise that I'm talking about them.
But it's a good way to open the conversation so that you're not criticising them or saying, why are you not responding to me? So that way you're exploring the topic in a safe way where everybody feels like, okay, I can contribute to this and this isn't what I think directly to you as a teacher. Very good.
I think it's a good way to deal with anxiety by telling people how you feel, and it doesn't have to be absolutely true. You can fabricate some of the details so that you don't embarrass yourself or your students or whoever. But just telling them a story, for example, and saying, I've got this situation, or I know somebody who's in this situation, then getting advice from your students can be really effective. And that can also open the class to want to talk about their own issues. But we'll come back to the students later. Another thing which I think we've covered in some detail, do you remember episode one, series one, season one, episode one, the first episode ever of Gavin M's How to English Pod M?
First lessons, of course I do, Gav.
Do you remember some anxiety discussions during that episode?
Not so much. Go on, refresh my memory.
Well, I think that was the majority of that episode was all about how stressful it is to have first lessons and how to deal with it.
That's definitely one for me. First lessons, those nerves, that is always the same for me. No matter how many years I've been teaching, I still get very anxious or nervous before the first lesson.
Maybe that's a distinction between nervousness and anxiety.
You're right, actually. As I said it, I thought that is the difference because I do get very nervous, but after the first lesson, it's usually gone. So after the first 10 minutes, it's usually gone. So it is a nervousness, not an anxiety. But you could say my anxiety of first lessons has stayed with me. I haven't managed to get rid of that.
So it always returns.
Yeah, that one is recurring. And I don't think anything can help me with that. I think I've just got to keep telling myself, you'll get through it and you've done it however many times before. You know you can do it. Do it again. You know, that's all I say. And as I think I mentioned before, just I distract myself before the first lesson so that I'm doing something to take my mind off of it. I plan the lesson, of course, and make sure I know what I'm doing, get all my resources ready, check I know everybody's names and everything.
And these are resources that you've used many times before, so you know they're going to work. Even though you're nervous, you know deep down that it's worked so many times before, it's going to work again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Tried and tested is reassuring to know that those materials do work. And I've got everything I need. But then, 10 minutes before the lesson, I do something else. Listen to a podcast, for example. Maybe just go for a walk. Take my mind off of it so that I'm not just thinking about it the whole time.
I hope you don't walk too far, Em, because it's only 10 minutes before the lesson starts.
I don't know. I don't really go for a walk. Maybe just walk up and down the corridor. outside the class. Now, that sounds nervous, doesn't it? No, I don't know. I just do something different.
Okay, you distract yourself.
Yeah.
Good. I like that you've got a plan before you start that class, though. That is a very, very good tip. And what makes you anxious?
I feel like numbers are, for me, the big one. So I'll start a lesson, and the more people who come, the bigger the class gets, the more my anxiety grows. And I don't know why that is, because if I take each of these students one-on-one, they're lovely. They're really easy to talk to, approachable. And I don't mean just first lessons. I mean any existing classes I've got. I just find the number of people in the class is indicative of my nervousness level. So one-to-one, I'm pretty okay. But as soon as it starts to get more than five, I feel like my anxiety levels are going up and up and up.
Why do you think that is?
I guess it's that feeling of being judged and being centre of attention. And the more people that are focused on me, the more fear I have of failing or getting something wrong. So if one person sees me mess up, that's one thing. But if I have 10 people see me mess up, then that's really horrible.
I can imagine that pressure building as more and more students enter the classroom. Is it because they're late or what's happening?
Just different times. People arriving at different times. But if I know I've got a big class, I do get very anxious before that class, and I don't always totally relax in that class. That's just maybe me. I don't know.
You don't relax until the bell goes and they've all left?
Yeah, until it's finished. Yeah.
But what about the second time or the third time you have those big classes? Is it still just as bad?
Yeah, it kind of does seem to be a pattern that happens, that just the more people arrive, the more nervous I get, the more anxious I feel. It's quite a reliable anxiety, that one. Yeah.
I don't have many large classes, so I'm quite lucky that way. But yeah, I think I'm the same. I feel it's really hard engaging a very large group of people.
It's not exactly logical, I suppose, but that is just how it feels.
But then refocusing the attention from the student back away from you, back to the class, may be a good strategy.
Yeah, it kind of goes up and down a bit, I think, the feeling. When they're engaged and doing something together, then the feeling goes away a bit. But then it's that moment when you have to tap on the board, or if you're online, you have to go, hello, everybody. Oh, that feeling for me is really hard, and I have to psych myself up to actually do it.
Really? Because I don't feel that at all.
Good. I'm glad. That's a good thing.
It's quite empowering to tell students to stop. And then I know that I'm going to elicit from each of those students, individually or in groups, the answers to the activity. I want them to tell me all about what was happening. And I know, again, I can kind of sit back and just let them do the talking. So even though maybe the focus is coming to me, still everybody is listening. Everybody is engaged in that moment. And it's not all the attention on me.
Well, when you say it like that, Gav, I feel like it's a lovely thing to do, but I see it as I'm just interrupting a really interesting conversation that they're having.
And why are you interrupting them? Why don't you just let them carry on?
Well, if they've been going for 10 or 15 minutes and I think, well, actually, now I need to correct their errors, or we need to get on to the next thing.
Why do you need to get on to the next thing?
I've got some, you know, I've got a list. I've got things. I've got places to be and things to do.
You mean you want to finish the lesson and say goodbye to them all?
Could just be that.
I just say to them, right, I'm going to leave you lot chatting. I've got to go to my next lesson. See you next week.
Oh, okay. That's nice. See, this is what I need to talk to you about, because there's nothing to be worried about. I just feel, yeah, maybe I'm not important enough to interrupt and say, okay, everyone, eyes on me. Let's get back to something else.
But I agree that there should be a moment in the lesson where you interrupt and say, let's get some feedback on this activity, not only because it's your opportunity to correct and just make sure that they've stayed on track during the exercise, but also to let the other students hear their classmates' discussions and see what topics arose in that discussion.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not just about coming back to you, or just focusing specifically on them, the student, and their error. But also, again, it's that bonding thing where they get to spend time listening to each other.
Mm-hmm. That's why we're doing it. That's what it's all about, I think. Sharing, checking, correcting, having time to have a one-on-one with each other, but then coming back as a group and reflecting and sharing the feedback.
Mm-hmm. Em, anything else as a teacher that gives you butterflies?
Butterflies are nice, though, aren't they?
Not in your stomach, they're not.
I always thought that they're nice.
Oh.
Like before a party or something, like a big good thing, like a positive event.
I think it's a synonym for nervousness.
It is, but I feel like that's a positive nervousness.
Anticipation, yeah, that can be quite nice. I'm often looking forward to seeing my students
every time, always, yes. What else makes me anxious? Making sure that I'm giving them what they want, I think, is the main problem I have with that.
Do you mean like sweets, pizza? What kind of things are they asking for?
They're English, that I'm fulfilling their goals, that I'm fulfilling their needs, and that I know what they want. I think I have a lot of doubt maybe sometimes that I'm doing what they want and I need some reassurance.
Mm.
So feedback is good. And as you've said, you can ask directly, but also if you're not sure about a class, you can always send out an anonymous feedback form that they can email back to you or just do at the end of the lesson so that they fill it out and put it into a...
into a hat?
No.
A box.
They put it just together in the middle of the table so it's not clear who wrote what. It's an anonymous feedback form.
Mm.
And that gives you more to work with. So mm-hmm. you know if there's a problem or if they're not happy about something and you can work on it. And it really helps me because I need that reassurance sometimes. I need them to tell me, I'm happy, this is great, this is what I want to do.
You, the teacher, needs reassurance from your students, Em?
Yes, Gav, I do. I really do.
Where's your confidence, Em?
I...
Em, you've been teaching for so many years now. How can you not know that you are a very successful teacher? Where are these doubts coming from?
I haven't got time to go into this. I think this is like for my therapist and the couch. But I would say a good teacher is always doubting themselves because that's how you get better and that's how you learn and improve. You've got to be, let's say you've got to have a healthy level of doubt and anxiety because otherwise you get complacent and you don't care anymore. So I don't wrestle with my demons. We snuggle.
So don't become that teacher who walks in the classroom, says, open the book to this page, and then just gets on with it.
Well, that's okay, but don't be that teacher that feels like you're perfect and that you do everything right, because nobody does. So I think once you start feeling like you're the best teacher in the world, you're going to then be not such a good teacher. So I feel like my anxiety is my superpower sometimes. As much as I don't like the feeling, I think it's what keeps me sharp.
I feel anxious just having this conversation. I think my confidence is knocked slightly.
Why?
Because I don't think I question it often enough.
Well, this is the weird thing that happens, isn't it, when you talk to somebody who's not the way you are. You're saying now you want to be more anxious. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, maybe I should just check in with my students a bit more often. They seem really happy. I do ask them. I do say, please give us some feedback. You know, write to the company, write to me. If there's anything you want to do, if anything's not the way you want it to, but I haven't had any negative feedback for a while now.
Which is fair. And that could be, for you as an indication that everything's fine.
That sounds like complacency to me.
Well, I wasn't pointing any fingers. I just think that we are maybe quite different in our approach. And maybe I am a bit envious that you don't have these fears as much as I do.
And I'm quite envious for all your fears.
Well, it's a controversial one, isn't it? Whether you think anxiety is a positive or not. I've had it for such a long time, I've had to come to terms with it, I think, and see it for what it is, that I can't actually get rid of it. And I'm going to always have it, but it's not necessarily a bad thing.
I think we're going to have to leave this with the followers for them to decide. Let's put a poll in this episode.
A poll?
Yeah.
What kind of poll are you talking about? You don't mean a pin?
No, a poll where you have to vote.
Oh. I thought you meant put a pin in it, like let's just have a break from it.
Is the poll, the poll would be, is anxiety good for you or not? Yes or no? All right. Moving on.
I was just imagining this massive, great big pole. Okay. Oh, you mean a pole. P-O-L-L, not P-O-L-E, that kind of pole.
That's it, Em. I think we need to hear from today's guest all about anxiety that the students may be suffering from.
And somebody who knows all about this topic is Paola Montero, who is a language anxiety coach.
I think you already know Paola. Is that right?
This is such a funny coincidence, Gav, that you reached out to Paola to ask about this topic, and she wrote back and sent us this recording and then mentioned that I had worked with her in Spain in the past.
What are the chances?
Yes, it was amazing. What a small world it is. So, yeah, I have very, very good memories of working with Paola. And today she's going to tell us all about anxiety for language learners.
That's right, Em. You can find Paola on Instagram. On her account, she writes, "We help you unlock your English and speak with confidence. Do you want to get rid of fear, shame and frustration once and for all? The solution is with Paola." Find her on Instagram. Links in our show notes.
Hi there. First of all, I would like to thank Gav and Em for inviting me to their podcast. So thank you so much, guys. I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Paola Montero. I'm from Spain, from the south of Spain, to be more precise. And I'm an English coach and a language anxiety expert. And for those who don't know what language anxiety is, don't worry, because I'll be explaining all this throughout this intervention. Well, I think that today I'm going to dive a lot into the mysterious connection between our thoughts, our feelings, and the thrilling and sometimes scary world of language learning. Let's kick things off with something we all secretly wonder about, which is mindset. I think it's like the great forgotten ingredient when we learn a language. It's like the secret ingredient that can make or break your language learning adventure. You see, I always say that there are two kinds of people: those who believe they can learn a language and those who believe they can't. And the twist, they're both right. You know, it's fascinating how our beliefs shape our actions, okay? So for those who wonder what language anxiety is, I have to say it's a group of emotions, okay, that we feel when we have to especially speak in a foreign language. The thing is that these emotions don't appear suddenly and that's it. They are normally fed by thoughts, okay? So that's why I say that our beliefs shape our actions. If you have limiting beliefs, they will bring you limiting emotions, which will bring limiting or negative actions, okay? And those actions will never get you the results you expect. Those people with a fixed mindset often think their language abilities are set in stone. So this leads to self-doubt and frustration. But on the flip side, those people with a growth mindset understand that language learning is a journey of growth and improvement, and they normally welcome challenges and mistakes as opportunities to learn. Neuroscience has shown that cultivating a growth mindset can significantly boost language learning outcomes. When we believe in our capacity to learn and adapt, we become more resilient in the face of, you know, linguistic challenges. So if you catch yourself saying, "I'm just not a language person, my English is not good enough, or they won't understand me because of my accent," I can tell you that it might be time to shift that mindset and open up a world of linguistic possibilities. Let me take you back to my school days when languages were my jam. English class was where I shone the brightest, I can say, and I often held the title of top student. But fast forward to university, where I decided to study translation and interpreting, my confidence took a nosedive. I quickly noticed that most of my classmates had a higher English level than I did. And this hit me hard. And I became super self-conscious. I stopped speaking unless I could say everything perfectly, which was pretty rare because perfection doesn't exist. This fear of messing up put a serious damper on my practice and progress. And however, years later, once I finished my degree and my master's, I found myself in Bosnia as a volunteer for a local association. I ended up in a little village up there in the mountains. I was fluent in three languages, and I thought I was ready for anything. But there, no one spoke any language I knew. So communication was the challenge. So I clung to a trusty dictionary to piece together sentences. But here's the kicker. I couldn't muster the confidence to speak fluently in a language I knew well. However, I found the courage to communicate in a language I had zero prior knowledge of. So this experience got me thinking. What had been holding me back in my language learning journey? Was it my actual skill level, or was it the beliefs and fears I'd placed on myself, particularly when it came to using English? So the big lesson for me was that confidence and self-belief matter as much as knowing words. It's not about how many words you know. It's not about how well you know the grammar. It's about having the guts to use them. So if you ever find yourself hesitating to speak in a language you're learning, remember my story. Sometimes the only thing holding you back is the belief that you can't. And for me, these experiences opened doors to endless possibilities and taught me the real value of self-confidence in language learning. Actually, language anxiety, it's like that unexpected twist on a roller coaster. It's real, it's there, and it can leave your stomach in knots. So I do understand you because I have felt it. I've gone through it. And it usually shows up when we're terrified of messing up or sounding silly. But guess what? Mistakes are like golden tickets to learning. So to tackle anxiety, why not try some mindfulness techniques, for example? This is something that I always recommend my clients. Taking a deep breath before speaking or visualizing successful conversations can work wonders. Additionally, building a strong self-image that can handle the occasional stumble is crucial. Making mistakes is actually the best way to learn. The thing is that you don't need to focus so much on your level or how good or bad your English is, because actually your thoughts are the ones which will bring you results. If they are limiting or negative, they will bring limiting or negative results. If they are more positive, and this is no magic, they will bring you positive results. Now let's stoke the fires of motivation. Have you ever noticed how much easier learning becomes when you are really motivated, like right at the beginning of the process? It's like adding boosters to your language journey, actually. But what's the spark that lights this fire? I think that motivation comes in two flavors, intrinsic and extrinsic. Intrinsic motivation is really, really important. It's like the inner engine that drives you forward. It's powered by your love for the language, the culture it holds, and the joy you get from learning. But you might be thinking now, Paola, I don't feel like that. I don't have that love for the language. But maybe if you set more realistic goals with the language, or you think about what you need the language for and why you want to learn it, that can bring that kind of intrinsic motivation. Because extrinsic motivation, on the other hand, depends on external factors that you cannot control, like, for example, exams or rewards or impressing someone or even flirt with someone. But to summon that intrinsic motivation, you need to know why you really want to learn the language, okay? And how you can connect emotionally with the language. That way, I think that you'll find the drive to keep pushing forward, even when the going gets a little bit tough. Then if you ever find stuck or struggling so much with the language, you know, sometimes, as I said, learning a language is like a roller coaster. The fear of speaking is like a beast that you have to face. And I can tell you that most people face that beast. But the more you speak, the stronger you become. So I will recommend small pieces of practice. Start small, build confidence, and before you know it, you'll be chatting like a pro. And that will mean that you will communicate with confidence. Okay. And to finish this little participation in Gavin M podcast, I would like to say that it's really important to chat about expectations. Okay. Fluency isn't built in a day or a week or a month, not even a year sometimes. It's a masterpiece which is created over time. Okay. You need to set achievable goals. You need to celebrate even the tiniest victories with your language. And of course, enjoy the journey. So remember, every word you learn is a step towards fluency. So stay patient and persistent. So, well, this is it. The thoughts and feelings we bring to our language learning can indeed shape our destiny. So I would tell you to embrace a growth mindset, ride the emotional waves, keep those motivation fires burning, and push through those obstacles. It's been a pleasure. Talk soon.
Thank you so much, Paola, and it's lovely to hear your voice again. It's been a long time. Thank you for sharing your journey with us. It was interesting to hear Paola's perspective on her English and how she got to university and then started to compare herself to other people. And before that, her English was what she considered to be her best subject, that she was a really, you know, top student in her English class at school. But then when she met all these people at a higher level, she felt anxious about speaking in front of them. And doesn't that just show you it's not just about your ability, it's about your feeling, and it's so connected to how you feel about it.
That's absolutely right. It can be the conditions, the environment that suddenly introduces you to a new challenge. And we should, as educators, Em, keep it in mind that our students may be comparing themselves to the other students in the class. That will definitely cause anxiety if you're not the best in that group.
Yeah. And I can see that with my students sometimes with new groups. Some of them seem very confident at the beginning, but then maybe new people come into that group and they may be a higher level. And you see the ones that were confident start to drop back a bit. And I think that is because they're comparing themselves to the other students.
What do you mean by drop back a bit?
Well, they don't come forward and talk, or they're a little bit quieter. They're just not as bubbly as they were perhaps on the first day, where they felt like, yeah, I know English and I can speak English. And then their confidence is knocked by somebody who may have a really broad vocabulary, or from their point of view, just speaks better than them.
That could definitely set you back.
So it's worth reflecting on this, I think, when you're looking at your classes, to think, well, how are they feeling with each other? And that's another aspect of teaching that we have to think about.
Keep an eye on the classroom dynamics and see who is rising to the top and who is getting left behind. I hate seeing those students struggling, so I do try to bolster them when I can spot them.
What do you mean, bolster them?
I might ask them to talk a little bit more than the others, or perhaps if they start getting a bit nervous, a bit anxious, I might ask them questions that they will be able to answer quite easily, maybe make it a bit easier for them in the class.
Just give them that boost that they need, maybe, to remember that they were able to do it before. But it's interesting, Paola says, from a student point of view, it's a very internal thing.
Paola also mentioned limiting your beliefs will limit your results, which is a fixed mindset, whereas a growth mindset welcomes opportunity to learn resilience. I really like that notion.
This is like a can-do attitude, isn't it? That mistakes aren't bad things. Mistakes help you grow. Mistakes are just stepping stones to the next level, and you have to make mistakes to get better. And I love this. This is a healthy way of looking at mistakes and will hopefully help students to feel less anxious about speaking. Because if you know you've got to make mistakes to get better, then you're going to welcome them in a way.
And some of my students are completely oblivious to their mistakes.
Yeah, that's the other side of the coin, isn't it? When they just don't care. But I think we're talking about those students who are nervous about speaking English because they don't want to get it wrong. And nobody's going to be able to get better if you don't get it wrong. So just bear that in mind.
I think the teacher can really help with this, where the teacher may allow the students to make mistakes and to not highlight them, but maybe come back to them later, but just don't constantly knock the confidence of the student. Mistakes, as you say, are not a bad thing, but they can be returned to, they can be corrected.
Yeah, that is a very fine line and a very difficult thing to balance. And we've mentioned before in previous episodes, if other students are looking at the teacher like, why are you not correcting this person? So you've got to work out how to do this in your class. But I totally agree with you. I think at least for the beginning, get that confidence there so that that student feels I am able to speak without having to stop every couple of seconds. And what I'm saying is understood.
And interesting. That could also be really important, that people want to hear what you have to say, not that you're just speaking clearly and correctly.
Oh, that is such a very, very good point, because if all you're doing as a teacher is picking up on the mistakes, you're losing the meaning. But if you're showing interest and making it clear that what they're saying is very good and, you know, you're following what they're saying, that is integral.
I agree. That will bolster the confidence. And just going back to correction, if you see other students are grimacing and pulling faces as to say, teacher, why are you not correcting my classmates' mistakes? You can have a little conversation with the group and say, how often do you want to be corrected? How often do you want the group to be corrected? Is it okay if I hold back and implement some little practices at the end of each activity where we go back and fix the mistakes?
Yeah.
Just see how your students react. But also explain to the students that sometimes it's not useful to correct everything, because it's clear what the students are saying and it will knock confidence. Just be open with the students. They do actually sometimes understand these principles.
I agree. I think you're right. Explaining it is really important. They then understand your methodology. They're not just thinking you're not paying attention.
Treat them like adults, because they really will understand.
Yeah. I found what Paola said about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation very interesting, Gav. And of course, what our students feel is their reason for learning English is something that's very personal to them. but as an extrinsic motivation, maybe that as teachers we can help with. So as we said before, acting very interested and engaged when your student's talking is motivation for them to talk to you.
When you say acting, Em, do you mean pretending?
Sorry, was that a slip? Maybe that was a slip.
No, I don't think it has to mean it's fake. Acting means behaving in a way.
And showing. Maybe I should have said showing.
Okay.
Showing that you're interested.
Because I am genuinely interested in what my students have to say, especially if they're passionate about whatever topic it is.
I am too. Maybe that was a Freudian slip. But what I'm saying is showing that, demonstrating that. Yeah, showing that you're interested. And I think that's a big help for a student to know that what they're saying will be received and taken in and enjoyed, even with the errors.
People want to know what they have to say.
So we can help with that. I think we can help with extrinsic motivation. And also as teachers, we can put ideas into students' heads, like, why don't you go for an exam course? Why don't you get this qualification? Why don't you try and get that promotion in your office? Because your English is good enough. I think we can give students these ideas to improve what they're doing and to move ahead.
Mm-hmm. And also reflecting with the student and saying, wow, I remember when we had the first lesson, I didn't understand a thing you were saying to me, but now I understand you perfectly. And your accent's really good. Your use of grammar, your vocabulary's just so much better than it was.
Definitely.
So there are plenty of techniques a teacher can apply while teaching in a classroom. Em, have you ever had to face the beast?
Oh, I face the beast every day.
What is the beast? What do we mean, Em? Paola mentioned this.
Yes, I like the beast. I've stroked the beast and braided its hair, and now it looks really pretty with little bows on it. I think you've got to make that beast into whatever form you can to make it less intimidating. And I think Paola's tips were very good for that. Don't worry about getting it wrong. You don't have to be perfect. Nobody's perfect. And confidence is such an important thing, to have confidence in yourself. And it's interesting because I've seen it in my classes that some of the highest level students can be some of the quietest students that are not very fluent. And some of the lowest level students can be really confident and really fluent with whatever little English they've got. And it's fascinating how that is such a spectrum of people and combinations of, you know, how they feel compared to their ability.
One student being really accurate, the other student being really confident but inaccurate. And we might be able to just mesh them all together into a big, bubbly, fantastic group of learners.
That's our goal, isn't it, as teachers, to try and get all these things working at the same time.
Emma, I want to return to some of the causes of anxiety. So I visited teachingenglishwithoxford.oup.com. They had a really nice article on managing learner anxiety and stress. Now, they identified causes of anxiety in the classroom and outside the classroom. So I've called this internal and external stresses.
Right. So it's things that make students anxious when they're in the room learning, but also outside in the real world.
I think we've identified quite a few examples of the internal. So there may be other students who are more confident or have better English than you. It could be doubting your own ability. It could be because your teacher's just putting you under too much stress and saying, right, stand up, tell us all about this thing. And you get really nervous. Or you don't feel that the other students or your teacher is really listening to you and maybe not really interested in what you're talking about, but the way you're talking. Give me some external factors that may knock your confidence, Em, and make you a bit anxious.
Yes, Gav. I had a student who was in the process of moving house, so she was very preoccupied with that happening at the time.
I had a student whose cat had diarrhea.
Oh.
And that was very distracting.
Mm.
So was yawning throughout the lesson. And I think he wasn't really engaged in the conversation we were having.
That's horrible. Right. Yeah, that would be an external anxiety, definitely.
So how would you identify any of these symptoms of anxiety in your students?
I think it would be visible. They would be looking anxious and possibly just checking their phone and
distracted, looking away.
Distracted, not able to concentrate. I've had many students that are just in the middle of something at work and they're emailing their boss or they just can't focus on what we're talking about.
Other symptoms could be a raised heartbeat. I'm not sure how you can see that on your students. Maybe you could get a monitor and
I'm
just...
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Okay. Fast breathing, feeling hot, jittery, restless.
Fidgeting.
Yeah, these are all possible symptoms of nervousness or distraction.
Good to recognise these things.
So the second step, M, we've identified the causes of anxiety, could be internal, happening in the class at that moment, could be external, affecting their learning within the class. How are we going to manage it?
Be sympathetic, give students time if they need it, maybe just recognise it and say, do you need 5 minutes? Do you need to make a call? I wouldn't personally make a big deal about it, and I wouldn't necessarily say, discuss it, let's go through it as a class, because I think that's not really my business if it's something private. But I think just give the student an opportunity to breathe and take a bit of time.
You can also do some breathing exercises together.
Nice.
That could be quite calming. Maybe focus on something positive, a favourite memory before the class or during the class.
That's good. So if maybe you recognise a student's very anxious, you could just bring into the conversation, oh, I had a really interesting meditation session the other day. Let me give you some tips. And then you're kind of feeding it in and showing them techniques and talking about it without them being the focus, but it actually has quite a good result.
You don't need to even say that. I want you all to be calm and not have a stressful lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Another tip. A small, smooth stone.
Oh.
In your pocket, maybe, or on the table. Something that you could just gently rub and massage. Just
nice.
To keep you calm.
Okay.
There's plenty of these tips online. I'm sure you can find something. But thank you to Teaching English with Oxford.oup.com for their suggestions.
Yeah, I like that idea. I like that you might give something out to everyone that could distract them and give them something to hold if you feel like the class is getting a bit tense.
And just drawing the attention away from themselves or from the group as a whole, and the students can be touching something, focusing on something else, and hopefully conversation and the activities of the class will come naturally from there.
Yeah, maybe play a game or something to take them out of themselves.
Nice. I like that.
Maybe a common thread that runs through this, Gav, is that everyone's asking the question, am I good enough? And I think the answer to that has to be...
maybe.
Yes. Yes, you are.
It is yes.
You're good enough.
I certainly am. Are you, Em?
Yes, I am.
Em, believe in yourself.
Got to work on that. Yes, I am.
You, as Paola mentioned, are the only thing holding yourself back.
Yeah. Em, stop holding me back.
And before we go, have you been enjoying our season one episodes revisited with transcriptions?
I have indeed, Gav. They are fabulous. It's so good to hear how we were in the past, all transcribed for anyone who wants to go back, listen again to the first season of Em and Gav. No, I should say Gav and Em's How to English.
And where are you finding these episodes, Em?
Anywhere you get your podcast, Gav.
And?
YouTube.
Precisely. Once again, if you're enjoying the shows, please consider visiting ko-fi.com, How to English Pod, and buy us a coffee or a cup of tea for Em.
Links in the show notes.
Well, I certainly feel a lot more relaxed now, Em, and I'm glad we had this conversation. I think bringing anxiety out into the public, into the conversation, allows us to pass through to
tame the beast.
To tame the beast, to
whip it into submission.
To whip it into submission, that's what I meant to
say. Let it go, let it recede, ebb away.
I'm going to put a leash on it, tying it to a post.
Not a pole. Okay.
And I'm off on my merry way.
Bye-bye, anxiety.
Catch you next time, Em.
Bye, Gav.